Skipping meals? Cutting out carbs? Still staring at the exact same number on the scale? Let's be honest. You aren't lazy, but your metabolism might be asleep at the wheel. Traditional dieting doesn't work anymore. It forces your body into starvation mode, burning up your hard-earned lean muscle while locking away deep belly fat. You're fighting your own biology. It's time to stop starving and start optimizing with Almacet. Almacet isn't a fad. It's a natural, high-protein, low-glycemic weight loss shake powerhouse backed by over 30 years of clinical university research. It doesn't crash your system. It reboots it. Almacet is scientifically proven to target stubborn gut fat while protecting your muscle mass. No artificial sugar or fillers. Almacet is made of three natural superfoods. It gives clean, sustained energy all day long and results you can actually see in the mirror. Stop fighting your body. Give it the fuel it needs to burn fat, crush cravings, and reclaim your edge. Go to Almacet.com right now to get your protein and shaker bottle. That's Almacet.com. Reset your metabolism, reclaim your health, and transform your body with Almacet.
Too often, green laundry detergents come with a compromise. They're better for the planet, but worse at the one thing that matters most, cleaning your clothes. Dirty Labs believes you shouldn't have to lower your standards for the sake of sustainability. Using advanced green chemistry, they created a detergent that uses an entirely new cleaning engine, inspired by the genius of nature. If Dirty Labs can't make you believe in the power of green cleaning, nothing will. Fall in love, or it's free, at DirtyLabs.com.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up on the final 55 minutes or so of our program here tonight, After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside producer Jacob Mustard. And we've talked Royals, we've talked Chiefs, we've talked about how I think the All-Star voting is stupid and needs to change. Well, let's change gears a little bit. Let's talk about some other sports news across the plain right now. And I guess we kick things off with last night's Game 7. Pacers Thunder in Oklahoma City, and it ends in a fashion that I think many expected, but I don't think people were... It was unfortunate, I guess, is the way I would describe the way that things ended yesterday. Pacers off to, you know, an early start in this game. They were playing well. Tyrese Haliburton with 9 points and only 7 minutes of action. He was playing extremely well. He hit 3 of his 4 3-pointers that he attempted. And then the thing you never want to see happen happens. Tyrese Haliburton, who came into the game dealing with a calf strain, which is not unprecedented for an injury of the magnitude that Haliburton was ultimately confirmed to have, ends up coming back to bite him as he kind of catches a ball out on the top of the key, tries to make a move, and you could see it. I mean, they showed the replay over and over again during the ESPN broadcast. Confirmed today he had torn his Achilles. So he missed the rest of the game. You could see the agony in the moment, right? Whether it was the pain, whether it was the realization that he had severely injured himself and was going to miss the rest of a Game 7 with an opportunity to win an NBA championship for himself, for the organization that he plays for, and for the city that he represents with the Indiana Pacers. Halley goes down, and the trajectory of the game changes dramatically. You know, Indiana tried to stay close. They relied very heavily on their bench from that point out. I mean, you look at the most shot attempts on their team last night. Benedict Mathurin put up 14 shots off the bench, most of anybody on the team. And then TJ McConnell with 13 shots. That was tied with Pascal Siakam for the second most field goal attempts for the Pacers last night. Very out of the ordinary for that team. But with the injury to Haliburton, it forced McConnell and Mathurin to play a lot more minutes. It also forced a lot more minutes for Andrew Nembhard, who put up 10 shots of his own and struggled. He had 15 points. He was 4 of 10 from the field, 5 of 6 at the free throw line. Siakam had a poor shooting night, 5 of 13. Aaron Nesmith was 1 for 4. And the Thunder were able to kind of take control. 29 points for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 20 for Jalen Williams, and 18 for Chet Holmgren. That was the most for him in any game in the series. And then you had Cason Wallace and Alex Caruso chipping in 10 apiece as the Thunder end up winning 103-91. They take the game, they take the series, and SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, wins MVP and Finals MVP in the same year. Now I'm going to say something. I don't think SGA should have been the Finals MVP. If you look at the splits, you look at the way this series played out. Yes, Shai averaged 30 points a game in this series on 44% shooting from the field. He put up nearly 23 field goals a game and averaged 30. He put up 10 free throws a night. He scored nearly a third of his points at the free throw line in this series. Shot 44% from the field. He shot 24% from the three-point line. He averaged almost 3.5 turnovers per game. And he struggled defensively to the point where they weren't really matching him up one-on-one with Tyrese Haliburton. SGA had a great season. He was the MVP for a reason in the league, although I believe it should have been Nikola Jokic. I think that voter fatigue ultimately gave SGA the honor. But Jalen Williams scored 23.5 points per game in this series. He shot a better percentage from the three-point line. He averaged 5 rebounds a game, nearly 4 assists. He averaged just over 2 turnovers a game. I don't know. I don't think SGA, with the way he shot the... And really, that's just kind of the culmination of this whole series, though. Because outside of Jalen Williams, nobody else was going to be considered for the honor. Chet Holmgren averaged 12-9 for the series. Alex Caruso was this team's fourth leading scorer at 10 points per game. Lou Dort at 8 a game. Right? It was just a weird series, man. It really was. SGA was just sort of like the de facto guy because it was him or Jalen Williams. And SGA was the regular season MVP. Just made sense to coincide that with the Finals MVP. And it would have been really interesting on the other side if the Pacers had won. It probably would have been Pascal Siakam, who scored 19 a game. He shot 45% from the field in the series. Tyrese averaged 14-6. It just, I don't know. So it was a very defensive-minded series that ends in a fashion nobody wanted to see, right? Jacob, you and I were talking about it in the bullpen prior to the show, and I agreed with you had said something, and I agreed with it. If Tyrese doesn't get hurt, I mean, the guy was looking to put up 40 last night. 9 points in 7 minutes to get things started. He was lights out to begin this game and could have very easily put up 30 or 40 points last night. I think if he stays healthy, the Pacers win game 7. I know you agree.
Yeah, and then also I think that kind of puts his case for the Finals MVP as well. If you have an electric game 7, I'm sorry, but that's going to overshadow what Pascal Siakam did all season. And yes, one thing about Tyrese is he still ended the game with more points than 3 of his teammates combined. And on the Pacers, he led his team in 3-point makes 7 minutes into the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, very similar. It would have been a very similar scenario to what happened last year, right? It seemed like for, you know, a good chunk of the series, games 1 through 4, let's say, it looked like, yeah, Jason Tatum's probably the Finals MVP. Jaylen Brown, you know, very close second. And then Jaylen had a phenomenal game 5, and it kind of leapfrogged him into being the Finals MVP. But it all goes for naught as Tyrese goes down with that catastrophic Achilles tear. And
it's just so sad, man. I mean, him, you got Tatum with the ACL, you got Dame with the ACL now. It's just, it's brutal for the sport.
Yeah, man, those Achilles tears are, I mean, they're becoming a lot more prevalent. And again, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor either. But I think that there is a strong correlation between strength and conditioning and the weightlifting and all those sorts of things and these tendons, these ligaments becoming a lot more sensitive. You look at, right, the way the game was played in all, you know, across professional sports 30, 40 years ago. Weightlift, yes, some guys did it, but it wasn't what it is now. You don't have multi-million dollar weight rooms and training facilities at every single location in all these professional, and guys are in the weight room every day, right? And when you do that, yes, your muscles get stronger. Your muscles expand, but those ligaments and tendons, they don't. So they begin to stretch further and further and further and further. Their elasticity gets far more compromised. And I think that's why you're seeing more of these ACL, MCL, PCL injuries. I think that's why in Major League Baseball, you're seeing pitchers dealing with the UCLs a little bit more. Yeah, they're stronger. That allows them to throw the ball harder, but you're compromising those ligaments and tendons in these very critical spots. And for an Achilles tear, it is about the equivalent of a UCL tear in the sport of baseball. It is a year-long plus recovery now for Tyrese Haliburton. So I think it's very, very likely. In fact, I would nearly be willing to put money on it. Tyrese Haliburton does not play for the Indiana Pacers next year at all. Jason Tatum does not play for the Boston Celtics next year at all. Very unlikely you would see Damian Lillard next year at all with those Achilles tears, because it is a year-long recovery for an injury of that magnitude. And it brings to the fore, what does the league look like next year? Right? You've got the Oklahoma City Thunder. They've got this core put together with a very good chance to try to repeat next year. They've now been there, done that. They've got the experience on their side, which really pairs well with the talent that they have, this young core of guys with SGA and Chet and Jalen Williams and Lou Dort, and the list goes on and on. Outside of Oklahoma City, where do you look? You'd say Boston, but now they're without Jason Tatum for the year. Still going to be a great basketball team, let's face it. You still have Jaylen Brown and Drew Holiday and Derek White and Peyton Pritchard. They're still going to be a playoff team. But are they a contender anymore? The Pacers' chances for next year just fell into the dumpster, right? They could slide Benedict Mathurin into their starting five, and they'll still be a solid team, probably a playoff contender. But the East is now so much more wide open with no Tatum, no Tyrese, no Damian Lillard, right? The Bucks, Celtics, and Pacers have taken a drastic step backwards. Okay, where do you go in the East? The New York Knicks look much better now heading into 2026. The Orlando Magic making the move for Desmond Bane makes things a little bit interesting there in Orlando. Of course, the Cleveland Cavaliers, after the phenomenal regular season they had, they end up getting dismantled by the Pacers in this playoffs. As long as, for Cleveland, as long as, you know, Donovan Mitchell and the rest of Darius Garland and the rest of those guys can stay healthy, I think Cleveland will have something to say in the East. And then you've got the West, which outside of Oklahoma City is, it's anybody could be the number two, right? You've got the Denver Nuggets with the best player on the planet, Nikola Jokic. You've got the Lakers, you know, Bron's back. More than likely he'll be back. I haven't heard anything to the contrary. Paired now with Luka Doncic after they got a couple dozen games in together where they can kind of gel a little bit.
We'll see how the Rockets and KD go.
Exactly where I was going next. Do we have a conversation about the Houston Rockets now? massive news in regards to the NBA outside of the Game 7 of the NBA Finals is Kevin Durant going to Houston. A major trade between the Suns and the Rockets as Houston gets Durant and the Rockets, or excuse me, the Rockets get Durant and the Suns get a ton of stuff, including Jalen Green, which I find fascinating. The guy can fill it up, but he's very hit or miss, inconsistent, still trying to find himself early on in his career. And a couple of other, you know,
Dylan
Brooks. Thank you. The Oregon guy that everybody hates is what I was going to say. Yeah. Dylan Brooks, who's a great defender. He can give you some offensively, kind of a 3-and-D sort of a guy who's an absolute nuisance in the league, along with the 10th overall pick in this year's draft and 5 second round picks. So Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, a first round pick this year and 5 second round picks. Meanwhile, Desmond Bain gets traded to the Magic for 2 players and 4 or 5 first round picks, or 2 first round picks and 4 pick swaps. So you're telling me that Desmond Bane is worth 2 players and 6 first round picks, but Kevin Durant is worth a guy who averages 20 a game. 20 plus a game. Dylan Brooks, who's a solid defensive player, and 5 second round picks.
The biggest issue with the trade is the Suns did not manage to get back control of their own first round picks, which is what Houston made the trade with Brooklyn a couple years ago to get those future trades. So they still don't own their own future. But then you also, for those first round picks, you got to consider that KD still, to our knowledge, has not signed an extension with the Rockets. So he is on his last year expiring contract versus the other trade gets you 3 years guaranteed of the players under contract. So
that's fair. That's a fair point you raise. I just can't really wrap my brain around how the value of a guy like Desmond Bane is somehow equivalent to, or some would argue greater than, a guy like Kevin Durant. I get that KD's 36 years old, but the guy averaged 26-6-4 last year on 52-43 splits.
And like 89, almost a 90% free throw. Too.
Oh, yeah. I don't feel like it gets discussed enough. And I know that people are going to argue. People are going to throw out names like Carmelo Anthony. People are going to throw out names like Michael Jordan, of course. I say this as my opinion. Kevin Durant is the best pure scorer in the history of this league. Ever. He is the greatest pure scorer in the history of basketball. The guy's played 17 years in the league, averaging 27 points per game on 50-39-88% shooting. The guy nearly has a 50-40-90 stat line for his career. And in fact, for a stretch of his career, that's exactly what he did. His last year in Oklahoma City, he shot 51-41-90. 50-40-90 in Oklahoma City in 2012-13. He averaged, in his 3 years in Brooklyn, he averaged 53% from the field, 40% from the three-point line, and 91% from the free throw line. Over a three-year period, he averaged 50-40-90. At damn near 7 foot tall. He fills it up like nobody in league history at an efficiency that has never really been seen in league history. The league's going to be fun. I think it's going to be interesting to watch. I just hope to God that ESPN either doesn't get the NBA Finals broadcast next year, which they will. They have the contract for it. Or they drastically change the way that they've done it. You know, Mike Breen and the guys that did the calls of the games did their best, but the presentation of the NBA Finals, I don't think was great. The pre and post game was a dumpster fire. They spent such little time talking about the game itself, and instead it turned into Stephen A. trying to make excuses for playing solitaire during the game, and he and Perk arguing the entire time. You've got a guy, you've got the Myers guy, who was the general manager and president of the Golden State Warriors when they were having all their NBA champ. You've got a dude who is a basketball savant sitting there who is having to mediate between these two morons bickering back and forth. But I will give Kendrick Perkins a little bit of credit, and we'll get to break here in just a second. Kendrick Perkins said earlier this week, during the weekend, in lead up to Game 7 of the NBA Finals, he warned Tyrese Halliburton about that calf strain. Said that maybe Tyrese should consider sitting out the game, which I know is an insane thing to think about. Sitting out Game 7 of the NBA Finals, are you crazy? But he mentioned that he saw Kevin Durant in his Achilles tear. KD was dealing with a calf strain. They had mentioned it for a few days. He tried to play through it. It inevitably leads to the Achilles tear, because when your calf is compromised, it puts a lot more pressure on the Achilles. That's what happened to KD, and that is apparently what happened to Tyrese Halliburton. Unfortunate the way that Game 7 ended. I hated to see that. Even though he's an Iowa State guy, I hated to see that for somebody like Tyrese Halliburton. To have the kind of year he had, being voted on by the players as the most overrated person in the NBA, overrated player in the NBA, by his peers, he was voted as the most overrated player in the NBA. And then leads his team to an NBA Finals with some of the most incredible late game heroics I have ever seen in my life. For it to end that way is just heartbreaking. 913-586-7965 is our number. We've got a lot more coming up here, including some pretty outlandish hot takes in the NFL in the lead up to the season. It's that time of year where people just say things that are absolutely insane to hear out loud. I'll regurgitate a couple and give you my thoughts on the other side of the break here. After Hours, Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard, 96.5, The Fan.
Look in the mirror. When did your metabolism decide to take a permanent vacation? You're working out, eating decent, but that stubborn gut just won't budge. Standard diets don't work anymore. They just starve your body, crash your energy, and burn away the lean muscle you actually want to keep. It's time to break the cycle with Almased. Almased isn't a fad diet. It's a high-protein, all-natural meal replacement shake, scientifically backed to burn deep belly fat while protecting your muscle mass. The secret is a unique, low-glycemic formula. It keeps your insulin in check, forcing your body to stop storing fat and start burning it for fuel.
I hit 50 and my energy cratered, while my waistline did the opposite. Nothing got rid of my belly fat until I tried Almased. I dropped the belly, got more energy, and honestly, I feel like I'm in my 30s again.
Don't settle for slowing down. Protect your muscle, kickstart your energy, and lose the gut for good. Go to Almased.com and use promo code BELLY to get a free shaker bottle and a free weight loss guide with your first order. That's Almased.com, promo code BELLY.
Washing your dishes before you wash your dishes? Dirty Labs believes going green in the kitchen should not mean doing extra work. Their bioenzyme dishwasher detergent cuts through stuck-on food and leaves dishes sparkling without compromising on safety or performance. No pre-rinse, no post-rinse, no compromise. Just powerful cleaning made without harsh chemicals. If Dirty Labs can't make you believe in the power of green cleaning, nothing will. Head to DirtyLabs.com and use code PODCAST to get 20% off your first order.
The results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par with me, Maury Povich, wherever you get your podcasts.
With the NBA season now over, and Major League Baseball less than a month away from the MLB draft, that's a lot of the focus of these two sports. The NBA draft is this week, in a couple of days, actually. The MLB draft less than a month away. And it's interesting kind of looking around at some of these mock drafts. Like the NBA, there's no discussion over who's going number one overall. It's going to be Cooper Flagg.
Well, the Mavericks could Maverick.
I mean, the Mavericks draft the right guys. They just inevitably do something, or I shouldn't say inevitably, but as of late, they do strange things once they've got them. Like, you do the draft night trade for Luka Doncic, an absolute home run for your organization, and then you're like, ah, he got heavy. Here, go to Los Angeles. Huh? By the way, the Mavs just extended Daniel Gafford. Gave him a $60 million deal. For anybody who could possibly care about that. So they're going to go with Cooper Flagg, number one overall. And then it kind of can get interesting. You know, I've seen a handful of guys be thrown out, right? I've seen VJ Edgecombe from Baylor. I've seen one of either of the duo of Rutgers guys, Dylan Harper, and oh my goodness, who's Ace Bailey is a name I've seen thrown out there as well. You know, Con Knipple from Duke, Cooper Flagg's running mate, even Jeremiah Fears from Oklahoma. He's really risen up a lot of draft boards here in the last couple of months. And then on the MLB side, that number one overall pick is a lot more wide open. It could be Cade Anderson. It could be Liam Doyle. It could be Ethan Holliday. It could be Jamie Arnold. It could be any number of guys. And then you look down the list and you go, according to ESPN's latest mock draft, with the Royals picking at 23rd, they have Kansas City projected right now, at least in their view, to take Josh Hammond, who is a high schooler from Wesleyan Christian High School in North Carolina. He is a third baseman. So, the comparison or the parallels are to Austin Riley, which Royals scouting director Brian Bridges drafted while he was with the Atlanta Braves organization. I wouldn't be overly disappointed in that. If I'm looking at what the Royals are going to do in the MLB draft, I think you have to attack bats. They've done a lot over the past few years in regards to pitching, and right now that's not your problem. You've got really, really good starting pitching. You've got Cole Reagans on a long-term deal. Yeah, the injuries are a bit of a concern, but he's your guy, your proverbial ace for hopefully years to come. Then you've got Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha, two aging veterans, but both of them having really good years this year, so you shouldn't be in any panic mode to try to replace those guys, at least this year or possibly even next year, because you gave Wacha an extension, and Lugo has one more year possibly with the player option unless he declines and enters free agency, which he very well could. And then you've got two young rising stars in Chris Bubich and Noah Cameron. You've got pitching in the minor league system, some. So you're not in a panic, you know, you're not in a position where you're really having to reach on starting pitching. You need bats. You did that with Caglione. You've got, you know, Blake Mitchell and Carter Jensen as younger prospects. Jensen seems to be closer and closer to the big league level, but I would like to see the Royals go after corner outfielders. I'd like to see them go after potentially a third baseman with a big bat or whatever the situation. I just think if hitting is your issue, and it appears that hitting could be your big issue for the next several years with how good the pitching is right now, do that. And then if you have an arm that, you know, was supposed to be a first round pick that's sitting there in the third round and you're like, this guy's too good a talent to pass up, okay, right? Go for a best player available in those sort of situations. I just like the idea of the first pick, or maybe even the first couple of picks, to be guys that can hit the bat and flash the leather a little bit. After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber, Jacob Mustard alongside producing our program tonight. I mentioned these hot takes that are being tossed around in the NFL. I've got a couple of them for you here that I'll share and tell you whether I think they're foolish or really foolish, because those are kind of the only two options right now. 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
Skipping meals, cutting out carbs, still staring at the exact same number on the scale? Let's be honest, you aren't lazy, but your metabolism might be asleep at the wheel. Traditional dieting doesn't work anymore. It forces your body into starvation mode, burning up your hard-earned lean muscle while locking away deep belly fat. You're fighting your own biology. It's time to stop starving and start optimizing with Almased. Onicet isn't a fad. It's a natural, high-protein, low-glycemic weight loss shake powerhouse backed by over 30 years of clinical university research. It doesn't crash your system. It reboots it. Onicet is scientifically proven to target stubborn gut fat while protecting your muscle mass. No artificial sugar or fillers. Onicet is made of three natural superfoods. It gives clean, sustained energy all day long and results you can actually see in the mirror. Stop fighting your body. Give it the fuel it needs to burn fat, crush cravings, and reclaim your edge. Go to Onicet.com right now to get your protein and shaker bottle. That's Almased.com. Reset your metabolism, reclaim your health, and transform your body with Almased.
Washing your dishes before you wash your dishes? Dirty Labs believes going green in the kitchen should not mean doing extra work. Their bioenzyme dishwasher detergent cuts through stuck on food and leaves dishes sparkling without compromising on safety or performance. No pre-rinse, no post-rinse, no compromise. Just powerful cleaning made without harsh chemicals. If Dirty Labs can't make you believe in the power of green cleaning, nothing will. Head to DirtyLabs.com and use code PODCAST to get 20% off your first order.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.
It's that time of year, right? You hit the end of June, end of July. People are starved for football. Season ends in February with the Super Bowl. March, you've got free agency. April, you've got the draft. And then you get into May and June and July, and you've got rookie mini camps and OTAs and mandatory mini camp and then training camp. But that's not enough, right? People need things to gravitate towards. And with that gap left, you see bold predictions come out from everywhere. And Jeffrey Chedia of NFL.com came out with way too early bold predictions for the 2025 NFL season. Bold predictions. Number one on the list, he's got the Bills winning the Super Bowl. Okay, I get like the Bills have been, you know, sort of that, I don't know, always the bridesmaid, never the bride sort of thing in the NFL, right? They've been right there. They've been in these big time matchups against the Chiefs in divisional round games or conference championship games, and they always seem to come up just a little bit short. But to say that that's a bold take for a team that right now has the third highest odds to win the Super Bowl seems a bit ridiculous. A bold take would be the Denver Broncos are going to win the Super Bowl, right? Or, like somebody in the teens in terms of Super Bowl, but like the team that's got the third best odds to hoist the Lombardi, that's a bold take that they're going to win the Super Bowl. Okay. Number two, he's got Joe Burrow will be the league's most valuable player. Again, that's not a bold take. If it hadn't been for the horrendous defense that Cincinnati has, he would have won the MVP last year. He had 4,900 passing yards and 43 touchdowns. He only threw 9 picks. He had an MVP caliber year a season ago, but they didn't make the playoffs because their defense was a joke. Not to mention, their defense could be even worse this year. So how does that add on to Joe Burrow's likelihood to win MVP? Yeah, they got Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins back. That's great. But their defense sucked last year. And currently, they don't have a defensive end, or at least not a decent one. The guy that led the league in sacks last year, and Trey Hendrickson, is still a part of a contract dispute. And They're trying to jip their first-round draft pick in Shamar Stewart, and he's not signed. Number three, he's got the Eagles will be the first team to repeat as NFC East champions in 21 years. How is that a bold take? Everybody and their mother is picking the Eagles to win the NFC East again. They're the best team in that division. They're the best team in the NFC. Top to bottom, they're probably the most talented roster in the NFL. Not a bold take, my guy. Here's one for everybody in Chiefs Kingdom. The Broncos will snap the Chiefs' streak of 9 straight AFC West championships. I disagree, but hey, give the guy some credit, because that is a bold take. Finally, we have a bold take to kind of sink our teeth into here a little bit. Number five, Caleb Williams will throw for 4,500 yards and 35 touchdowns. What? He threw for 3,500 yards and 20 touchdowns last year. The offensive line is better. They drafted Luther Burden. They've already got other weapons around him, of course, with Rome Odunze and DJ Moore. They even got a tight end in Colston Loveland in the first round. I don't mind that take. 45 yards and 35 touchdowns is putting you in MVP conversations, offensive player of the year conversations, probably puts the Bears in playoff contention if he has that kind of year. Not a bad take. Daniel Jones will win comeback player of the year. A guy who's currently engaged in a quarterback battle with Anthony Richardson will win comeback player of the year in the NFL. I think you're completely out of your mind there. Here's my favorite one. Ashton Jeanty will run for 2,000 yards. Excuse me? I mean, I get that Ashton Jeanty is a dog. Super disappointed that he fell to the Raiders and they hit a weapon like that for this team. I think it's a phenomenal, phenomenal fit. But 2,000 yards is insane. Just to kind of put this whole thing together for people. Within their own division, right, in the AFC West, they'll have to play the Denver Broncos twice, who have a phenomenal defense. They've revamped it a little bit and added some extra weapons. They gave up only 96 yards a game last year. That was third best in the NFL. They'll have two games against the Kansas City Chiefs, who last year were eighth in the NFL in rushing defense, giving up 101.8 yards per game on average. They did not allow a 100-yard rusher all year last year at the running back position. The only one they did allow it to, Lamar Jackson. Quite often, in several Chiefs games last year, they gave up more rushing yards to the quarterback than the running back. And then you had the Los Angeles Chargers, who were in the top half of the league last year, giving up just 117.5 rushing yards per game. If he was playing in the NFC South against the Panthers and the Saints, who were dead last and second to dead last in the league last year, yeah, sure. Maybe. Ashton Jeanty 2K is preposterous. I mean, how many 2,000-yard seasons have even been accomplished in the NFL? Nine running backs have accomplished that feat. And only two guys have done it in the last 13 years in the NFL. Derrick Henry in 22 and Saquon last year. The Raiders do not have the offensive line capable of a 2,000-yard rusher. And when you pair that with having to play six games against teams in your own division who are among the best defenses in the NFL, especially in terms of rushing defense, no shot. No shot. Just thought that was funny, dude. I mean, like, at least it's bold, right? I'll give him that. Half of those weren't bold takes. Joe Burrow to win MVP. The Eagles to repeat as NFC East champions. What? Oh, how bold of you to assume that the team that won the division last year has the best roster collection in the NFL and is defending Super Bowl champions is going to repeat as division winners in a division that includes the Cowboys, who seem uninterested in winning. Yeah, the Commanders are going to be really good, but the Eagles are a better football team, and the Giants are terrible. After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, we're going to take a break, come back, and wrap up our program here on this Monday night. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard, your home for Kansas City sports. Wrapping up our program here on this Monday night, after hours on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber here with you. Jacob Mustard is alongside producing the program here tonight, doing a great job behind the glass. Royals back in action tomorrow night as they will host the Tampa Bay Rays at Kauffman Stadium. Rays, one of the better teams in Major League Baseball this year on the road. They are 16-12 on the road this year, 43-35 overall. It will be Chris Bubich on the bump for Kansas City, 6-4 with that minimalist 2.12 ERA, taking on Taj Bradley, who is struggling this year. 4-6. He's got a 4.95 ERA. Hopefully we'll have an opportunity to see the Royals bats get to him early and often tomorrow night as they sit two games below 500, 38-40, and they are right at 500 at home this year. 19-19 in Kansas City. Going to be another warm one, 87 degrees at first pitch, 6:40. Wednesday, back in action again, 6:40 first pitch. It'll be Michael Wacha matched up against Drew Rasmussen. Another guy who, or I shouldn't say another guy, very similar to Bubich, having a great year. 6-5, 2.61 ERA. So he's pitching extremely well this year. We'll see if the Royals can get to him. And then it'll be Shane Boz, for Tampa going up against Lorenzen on Thursday. That's going to be an afternoon matinee, a 1:10 first pitch. If there's a series the Royals are going to take advantage of and win this week, it's got to be this one. It's got to be against Tampa. Because if you don't, if you lose two out of three against Tampa, or God forbid you get swept by the Rays, now you got to turn around and play the Dodgers for three games this weekend at home. Dustin May against Noah Cameron on Friday. And then Saturday, you've got Lugo against an undecided pitcher for the Dodgers, although I have heard that it could be Ohtani on Saturday or Sunday, for that matter. And then it'll be Bubich, presumably, again on Sunday for Kansas City. Wouldn't that be a hell of a pitching matchup? Chris Bubich against Shohei Ohtani, which you're not going to see Ohtani pitch five or six innings in this game, whether he pitches well or not. You'll see him pitch two or three, because they're very much limiting him right now coming off of the Tommy John surgery. This is a monumental six-game stretch for the Royals. I'm not sitting here saying they should go 4-2 or 5-1, but if you can take two out of three against Tampa and then you lose two out of three against the Dodgers and you've got a wash of a week at 3-3, you're still sitting two games below 500. Okay. Even, and I hate to say it, but even the 2-4 weekend's not the worst thing in the world. But man, losing five out of six or getting swept in both of these series, all of a sudden you're eight games below 500. Over half the season's over with. You enter the month of July with that record in mind. Going on the road again, you got to face Seattle for three games. You head into the 4th of July, where you're on the road against the Diamondbacks, which features a porous pitching staff, but a lineup that hits and hits well. Eugenio Suarez, Ketel Marte, Burns, they hit the ball really, really well there in Arizona. This could be a big couple of weeks if you're the Kansas City Royals. This schedule is a gauntlet
right now, and it's already begun, right? They had a great week last week, winning 4 out of 6 between Texas and San Diego. Now you got to try to continue that. 3 against Tampa, 3 against LA, 4 on the road against Seattle, and then 3 on the road against Arizona before you get Pittsburgh for 3 games where you could possibly see Paul Skeens. Not a pitcher you want to go against, unless you're the St. Louis Cardinals. I don't know. Never one to panic. Never going to be one to panic when it comes to this Royals team. Not until if we hit August and this Royals team is still under 500. But I just said, I mean, 3 teams last year that hit the All-Star break hit you know, below 500 and made the playoffs. It can happen. The Detroit Tigers were in a very similar position to this Royals team a year ago. They ended up winning the same number of games as Kansas City. They won 86. And now, good Lord, they're the best team in baseball. That'll do it for our show tonight. For my producer, Jacob Mustard, doing a great job as always. I'm Logan Weber. Thank you guys for joining us. Thanks for getting involved in the text line. Always a good time being able to chat with the sports fans here in the metro area. This has been After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. We out.
Skipping meals, cutting out carbs, still staring at the exact same number on the scale? Let's be honest, you aren't lazy, but your metabolism might be asleep at the wheel. Traditional dieting doesn't work anymore. It forces your body into starvation mode, burning up your hard-earned lean muscle while locking away deep belly fat. You're fighting your own biology. It's time to stop starving and start optimizing with Almased. Almased isn't a fad. It's a natural, high-protein, low-glycemic weight loss shake powerhouse backed by over 30 years of clinical university research. It doesn't crash your system. It reboots it. Almased is scientifically proven to target stubborn gut fat while protecting your muscle mass. No artificial sugar or fillers. Almased is made of 3 natural superfoods. It gives clean, sustained energy all day long and results you can actually see in the mirror. Stop fighting your body. Give it the fuel it needs to burn fat, crush cravings, and reclaim your edge. Go to Almased.com right now to get your protein and shaker bottle. That's Almased.com. Reset your metabolism, reclaim your health, and transform your body with Almased.
Too often, green laundry detergents come with a compromise. They're better for the planet, but worse at the one thing that matters most, cleaning your clothes. Dirty Labs believes you shouldn't have to lower your standards for the sake of sustainability. Using advanced green chemistry, they created a detergent that uses an entirely new cleaning engine, inspired by the genius of nature. If Dirty Labs can't make you believe in the power of green cleaning, nothing will. Fall in love, or it's free, at DirtyLabs.com.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.